So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation. OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who are excited because OU's football season starts in 3 days. The 2025 season starts in 3 days as we record this on Wednesday afternoon. If you're excited about that, this is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and On3-Rivals. I'm Jesse Crittenden, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Brian Clinton. And Brian, we had to re-record this intro because my mic stopped working.
Yes.
But I'm going to go ahead and launch into the same bit that I was doing before we had to stop, which was I called you Mr. Viking.
Yeah, by all means.
So let's just act like we never had to restart recording. How are you feeling about the Viking season
this year, man. Brian? Feeling pretty good. Like the fact that they were able to retain Brian Flores. It's always fun on the defensive side of the ball. And then I feel really good about JJ to JJ, as we said a bit ago.
You know what's dangerous for me?
What's that?
Is I'm actually starting to get excited about the Cowboys. I know. I'm dumb.
I want you to be happy. That's all I care about.
Well, if you want me to be happy, then you should tell me to not be a Cowboys fan. Or
I've told you to be. There's plenty of room up here in Viking country. You can, but I mean,
how far of a drive purple, is it? Like from OKC to Minneapolis?
Well, for me, it's about 10 hours, so probably 12-ish for you.
That's not that bad. Honestly, I mean, because if I'm a Vikings fan, I'm like, hey, got a new quarterback, young quarterback, got a stud receiver. You know, you feel like you can build towards something, even though last year was obviously
good offensive line.
Offensive line. Last year was really good. Disappointing ending, but a good year.
Yep.
Better than anything the Cowboys have been doing lately. And what do I have if I'm the Cowboys? Actually, I will say I'm like slightly excited about Schottenheimer. He's different than Mike McCarthy. If nothing else, he's different than Mike McCarthy.
Nothing else, it's going to be different.
You know what people are also hoping is going to be different? OU's football team compared to last year. Do you see that segue? Do you see what I just did there?
That's good, man. That was good.
Thanks, man. You can only do that if you're a professional podcast host.
Correct.
Like me. OU's football season starts in 3 days. It genuinely doesn't feel real. This year felt like both the longest and shortest offseason ever simultaneously.
Yeah.
It was like both. Maybe part of it is because OU opens the season against Illinois State. And maybe that's part of it, but also not that different compared to other season openers.
This is the first football season in a long time that snuck up on me, but of course, I've been focused on other things. So I'm like, oh, yeah, there's football this week.
Yeah. There was football last week. That Iowa State Kansas State game was crazy.
It was. Yeah.
Also, it was ugly.
It was very ugly.
It's ugly. But this weekend might be ugly too for different reasons. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about OU football opening the season against Illinois State. But before we do that, let's talk about how Brent Venables hates Lincoln Riley. Let's talk about that. I'm kidding.
And all the drugs. Yeah.
Yeah, all the drugs. OU football. I've got that headline in the system. OU's football program infested with narcotics. obviously, I'm kidding. Anybody that watched the Brent Venables presser yesterday saw his comments about the way things were in 2022. Some people saw that as a shot at Lincoln Riley. I didn't. You can see my feelings about that topic. In this quick slants video that Parker and I did yesterday, I don't really care to reiterate it here. Other than Brent Venables pressers are, if anything else, they're not without interesting comments buried in 5 or 6 minute answers.
Correct. Yep.
Let's talk about the depth chart because that's way more interesting to me. We haven't got to talk about the depth chart. It was released on Monday. It was released on
Monday.
We want
to start with third string quarterback. No, go ahead.
Yeah. Where's Jet New? Where is he? Where is he on this? On the, sorry, no slight to Jet New. That felt unfair. I'm sorry, Jet. What stood out to you? Just tell me, we haven't got to talk about it. What stood out to you about the depth chart? Any position group, any player, anything like that that stood out to you?
So three guys listed as a starter at right tackle was interesting. Also a left tackle, three starters. I think that if there are two things that stood out, it would be Sammy Omosigo being listed as a co-starter at Mike, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And then David Stone being listed as a co-starter with Dominic Williams there at defensive tackle. That screams, that tells you everything you need to know about the fall he's had, or the fall camp that he's had. So, excited about that. I'm just ready to see Kendall Daniels running around at Cheetah. Like, I mean, it's going to be fun.
I think the interior of the defensive line, I mean, those four guys, it's going to be Dominic, Jaden, Grayson, and David Stone. And I do think that foursome could be the best foursome in the SEC. I think so. They're going to play a lot. We're going to talk about what things we're going to be looking for on Saturday. That's one of them. In addition to just the rotation at different position groups, I'm really curious at what that rotation looks like. Cause I wonder how close to like a 50-50 split it's going to be between those four guys on the interior. Dominic and Grayson are both team captains. They're going to play a lot. Jane's going to play a lot. I think David Stone's going to play a lot too.
I do too.
Let's talk about, there's all kinds of things we could talk about on this depth chart. I think Tom Green from Sooners Illustrated noted there are actually fewer oars on this depth chart than there were a year ago. There are 19 on this depth chart compared to 22 a year ago. There are 9 position groups where there is a clear starter with no oar. One of them is tight end.
Yes,
that's,
it is.
And that's Jaron Kanick at tight end, followed by Will Huggins and Carson Kent. Now, I think part of this is because Caden Helms isn't even listed on the depth chart. He, along with Kendall Dolby, Eli Bowen, Taylor Tatum, Javonte Gibson, Jaden Gibson, a few of the notable guys that aren't on the depth chart. But Jaron Kanick, no or next to his name. He's going to run out with the ones tomorrow. Saturday. I take this as, does this mean the tight end position isn't a question mark? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Is it ideal that a guy that just transitioned from linebacker to tight end a few months ago is your starting tight end? Is that concerning? You could look at it that way, but or you could look at it as he's a guy that worked harder than anybody during the offseason and became the starting tight end for week one. Tell me, how do you feel about that tight end group and Jaron Kanick?
Yep. I like the fact it was not on my bingo card that there would be a solidified starter at that position. That was one that I almost felt like you would almost certainly have an or somewhere. And it's pretty clear. It's a clear cut and dry. Kanick is your top guy there. Now, I think that's reflective of what you heard throughout the offseason. I mean, he was watching as much film as coaches were from the sounds of it. A guy that was just constantly in the building doing whatever it takes to get better. And to be in a program, in a place where those kinds of things are rewarded like this. Now, is Jaron Kanick going to start all 12 games of the regular season at tight end? I don't know. But at least for the beginning of the year right now, he has proven that he's done what it takes to get on the field. And, like, let's not forget his athleticism. Like, I understand some of the other offensive weapons that you have on this team that you feel like you have. But Kanick was a big time athlete coming out of school. No, he's probably not going to be a huge difference maker when it comes to being your lead or fill block guy, but you get the ball in his hands and he could be dangerous. So I like it. I like the it's a solid it feels like a solid decision, I guess, is the best way of putting it. He's earned it.
The only other thing I'll add to that is, look, if you're looking for one of those tight ends to be a 30 catches for 500 yards and a few touchdowns kind of guy, you're probably not getting that. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But I think part of that, it isn't even just about the guys in that room. I think it's you're going to see a heavy rotation at tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Kanick's going to have to, if he's going to start all 12 games, he's going to have to earn it. Caden Helms is going to come back. Carson Kent and maybe Will Huggins too, they're all going to see the field a lot.
Yep.
But Kanick probably offers the highest upside. I want to ask you about this because I've had a few people reach out to me about this specifically, and I want to get Brent Venables talked about it today on the SEC teleconference a tiny bit. Look, Jaden Ott was listed third at running back. That wasn't that surprising. A little surprising, not that surprising. He missed. He was limited for parts of fall camp because of a shoulder injury. Javonte Barnes had one of the best fall camps of anyone on the roster. Toy Blaylock was awesome. Those two guys were also sometimes the only two healthy running backs OU had. That wasn't that surprising. But him being listed as the no-doubt starter at kick returner is interesting. There's a couple different ways to break this down, okay? He did return kicks at Cal. He was a starting kick returner at Cal. I think he had 22 attempts the last two seasons as a kick returner. So he has that experience there. But it's interesting because you would think that part of the reason why he was listed third at running back is because he's still making his way back from that shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he's going to be out there for kick return on Saturday.
Yeah.
I have a lot of different ways to look at this because I also, OU attempted 13 kickoff returns last year. 13. Won a game.
Yeah.
They have been actually in the Brent Venables era, and even I think dating even before Lincoln or even when Lincoln Riley was around, I did a story not that long ago. Kick return numbers across the country are down. They have been for some time as the new rules have been implemented. They are even lower at OU. OU is one of the lower kick return attempt teams.
Yeah.
You can look at it that way. You can look at it as get some explosiveness in there because OU hasn't had a kick return for a touchdown since 2016. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you can look at this.
Yeah.
How do you look at this, Brian?
I see it as he probably is your most talented guy at that particular skill set. But I also look at it as Torrey Blaylock is higher on the depth chart than he is. Isaiah Satania is listed as a starter at H. I think this is probably just a way, if for nothing, like, okay, can we just not pretend that the depth chart in week one is really like, let's pull the veil off a little bit. Like, it's really not that important in the grand scheme of things. It does give us an idea of how guys looked in fall camp, and it is a way of rewarding some of those guys. And I think that's exactly what you're seeing. We've heard Brent Venables say it multiple times. Your best ability is availability. We've heard this like for years now, and I think that's what you're seeing at running back. I think that's those two guys that are ahead of Ott, they've been available. I think having Ott at kick returner and starting there is probably more just like a, hey, like, we respect what you've got and what you bring to this team. Don't think that this is just a slight on you. You are the best guy we probably have at that spot, and you're going to get your fair share at running. Like, don't be afraid that Jaden Ott's just going to be forgotten in the backfield. Like he was clearly a guy you go out and get, and he'll be treated as that. I think this is just nothing more than making sure everybody is paid their dues for fall camp.
I know some people will point to the increased injury risk, and sure, there is. I mean, more people get hurt on special teams than any other play in football, so I get it. Just doing my quick math here, and this actually is inspiring me to do a story on this later. Oh, you had 13 kickoff returns last year. 14 teams in all of FBS had 13 or fewer kickoff returns.
Hmm.
So OU was in the bottom 14 in attempts a year ago.
So maybe it's just the fact that, you know, he's going to, you have no worries about the guy fielding the ball and handing it to the referee. Like, this is a guy that's done it. It's there, you know. Maybe that's what it is. I have no idea.
I think the other thing to mention here, the other thing to mention is the offensive line, which was illuminating for a bunch of different reasons. It confirmed what we had seen at practice, what we had heard from people around the program about the way the offensive line was in flux throughout fall camp, and that a couple guys in Heath Ozaida and Logan Hallen were really starting to emerge from injuries and the surgeries that they had in the spring. Every position group at the offensive line, except for Fabechi Wiwu at right guard, all of them have co-starters listed. All of them. That's Michael Fasusi and Jacob Sexton at left tackle. That's Heath Ozaida and Eddie Pierre-Louis at left guard. That's Troy Everett and Jake Mikla at center. And that's Derek Simmons and Logan Howland at right tackle. This was a conversation between beat reporters a couple weeks ago when Bill Beanbo talked to the media, because he said he was talking about the interior, and then he said, we've got six or seven guys that we feel comfortable playing. And so the question was, did he mean the entire offensive line or just the interior? And this would indicate the interior, because you've got Troy Everett, Jake Mikla, you've got Heath Ozaida, Eddie Pierre-Louis, got Fabechi Wiwu, Ryan Foje. Anything stand out to you about the way that offensive line group shook out? And I mean, Fabechi's not surprising. He's going to be the right guard. He's going to probably start all 13 games. How much do you read in? Because you mentioned this earlier. It's week one. They're playing Illinois State. This depth chart is going to change. Anything stand out to you about how things shook out on the offensive line?
If you're going to put Jacob Sexton there as a co-starter, but Fasusi is ahead of him still, like, I mean, maybe you read into that a little bit. Like, Michael Fasusi has at least earned to have his name at the top. Like, maybe that's worth taking away. But, like, to me, that still kind of feels a little bit of a reach. I just think, obviously, when you look at the depth chart as a whole, that density of oars there on the offensive line, you can look at it one of two ways. One, it's kind of like that old saying about quarterbacks. If you have two, you don't have, you know, this is a situation where you've got two deep, sometimes three deep at a position that you feel pretty good about. So, you can look at it as, uh-oh, this is a problem. Or what a lot of people have kind of been thinking this season, this offseason, has been that room just looks so much better because of the guys that were thrown into the fire last year. And because of the young guys that have come in and really elevated. Plus, you've got some health finally back in that room. So, the competitive depth hot button word that you heard a lot last year, it really does feel like you might have a better feel for that on the offensive line. And I think that's kind of it's indicative of that.
Ben Arbuckle said, I mean, they're going to rotate. Guys are going to rotate.
Yeah.
In this first game. And he also said they've got to get to a point where they feel like they've got the guy at all five positions. So you know what? Unless you're Fabechi Wiwu, those other four spots, I mean, you have to take Saturday as, this is an opportunity for me to shore up that spot. And I think Derek Simmons is pretty locked in at right tackle, all probably. But the battles at left guard and left tackle, man, are going to be two of the most interesting things to watch. I mean, Heath Ozaida and Eddie Pierre-Louis, and then Michael Fasusi and Jacob Sexton. I mean, the roadmap's there for all four of those guys to go take it this Saturday. Right. I mean, it just is.
Yep.
And that leads me to actually, one other thing I should mention, Cortland Guillory listed as the co-starter at left cornerback ahead of Jacoby Johnson and Devon Jordan. And if anybody listened to Brent Venables' presser yesterday, being in the room, it's clear Brent Venables likes Cortland Guillory.
Sure does.
Really likes that guy.
Yeah.
Said he has a dog. He is what you might call a dog.
Yeah.
And this tracks completely with what we saw in fall camp. Cortland Guillory, not only listed as a co-starter, he is the only true freshman listed as a co-starter on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Something else interesting in that secondary, from what I can tell, Reggie Powers is the only guy listed in the top two of two positions on the team here.
That's right.
So he is a co-starter at Cheetah, and he's listed as your second string strong safety. So a lot of hype about him this summer, and I think that kind of, again, it shows up.
It does, and I think the other interesting thing is there are, to my count, there are three underclassmen on defense listed as co-starters. That's Cortland Guillory at cornerback, who I think will be the guy that runs out first. That would be Reggie Powers at the Cheetah spot, and Michael Boganowski at free safety alongside Robert Spears Jennings. Now, is Robert Spears Jennings going to start? Yes. Is Robert Spears Jennings going to be one of the heavy snaps guy on this defense? Yes. Is Michael Boganowski going to play? Yes.
Yes.
Michael Boganowski is going to play. And man, I mean, I think this is going to be the year where you see a first-year guy like Cortland Guillory and some second-year guys, Reggie Powers, Michael Boganowski, David Stone, really kind of emerge on this defense.
Take a step.
Which leads me into, let's talk about Saturday, man, because it's here. OU football season is here. 5 o'clock, I believe, Central Time. ESPN Plus, I think, or SEC Network Plus. SEC Network Plus. Normally when we talk during the season, we'll do pretty in-depth breakdowns of the team that Oklahoma's playing, just like we have the last couple of years. I don't really know if we have one to do here. I think OU's at 30.
No disrespect to the
Birds. No, dude, they'll make noise in FCS. They'll make noise. They'll be good.
Yeah.
I think OU is a 35.5 point favorite.
Yeah.
I think. So no disrespect to the Redbirds. That's what they're called, right? The Redbirds.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. For some reason, I was like, Red Wings, Red Bull. Sorry, it's Redbirds. I don't mean to disrespect Illinois State. I really don't.
It is worth noting that they're ranked sixth in the FCS preseason poll. So
they're going to be good. They're going to be good in the FCS. And look, if this is a close game, somehow, then hit the alarm bells for Oklahoma. I don't think it's going to be. So if we're not talking about a specific opponent, if we're just talking about this weekend, Team 131, the 2025 Sooners take the field.
Yeah.
Brian, tell me a position group. Tell me a position group you're really going to be watching.
Quarterback.
Are you worried about starting, John Mateer?
I am taking the low-hanging fruit, and it's for nothing else, the reason for it is I really hope that this team has a downfield passing game because I watched and covered one season of a team that didn't have a downfield passing game, and it was tough to watch. So my eyes go quarterback, wide receiver pretty immediately. But I mean, for if we're looking at this from, you know, like the team perspective, what's important, really these first games against lower tiered opponents, I think the best thing that you look for is execution. Like just guys going out there and doing what they know to do, what they're told to do, what they're coached to do, and doing it efficiently. We're not having, you know, if there's going to be issues like, you know, having 10 guys on the field in the 11th, not knowing what he's doing, you know, those kinds of things. Like you want to get those worked out here, but from all accounts, this has been a pretty player led team in a lot of ways. And so I'll be interested to see what that looks like, because I remember last year it did feel early on, on the offensive side of the ball anyways, there was a lot of that kind of stuff going on. So just looking for a clean game, if that makes sense. Just want to see guys just going out and executing and doing it in a way that, you know, shows improvement from a year ago.
You sound like a coach. Sounds like coach speak, Brian. Tell me, you're a fan now. You're not a credentialed reporter. You're a man out of the clock.
That's
a fan.
I am. I mean, I am who I am until they drag Michigan behind the Sooner Schooner, and beat them by 30 points and leave them in a bloodied pulp. I'm still going to be coach speak. Now, when that happens, when that happens, I'll get excited and you'll hear a little bit more. I'll put myself out there a little bit more.
You know, Michigan fans are starting to feel pretty confident about that game.
Sure.
Yeah. They are. I think a lot of Michigan fans think they're going to come in.
They should come in just feeling great about things. They should.
And also, I was going to say, you said you're looking for a downfield passing attack. You're telling me the offense that ranked 119th in passing offense a year ago, that didn't do anything for you?
That's not cutting the mustard. That's not going to cut the mustard.
What cuts mustard? Does knife
butter
cut mustard?
Knife. I think so.
Can you cut mustard?
I would assume.
Well, what kind of mustard are you buying? Are you buying like
mustard
like
seeds?
A thick mustard?
Like the faith of a mustard seed.
But man, even those are like small. Are you?
Yeah.
How are you
bitty?
Can you cut those?
I would think so. If it dries, you know, dried mustard, whenever you got the French's mustard and you pop the top and it's dry up there. You got to cut that all. Yeah.
I'm not a mustard.
Let's go back.
You're going way in depth on my, I'm not a mustard guy. Never been a condiment guy. I don't like ketchup either. That's my hot take. I think ketchup is gross. That's my hot take. God, this, you know what also was gross, just like ketchup, is, oh, he's passing offense a year ago. God,
it was bad.
Good, yeah. Lord, 119th. That is just bad. Beyond brutal. Yeah, look, John Mateer should have a field day. These receivers should have a field day. Should mention, your starters at wide receiver, written in ink, at least for week one, Keontez Lewis, Isaiah Cetania, Deion Burks. And I think the thing that I am most excited about, or most curious to watch, is in addition to just John Mateer, a vertical passing game, I am very curious about watching Deion Burks being more on the perimeter, not being in that slot receiver role. What does that look like? How far down the field is he running his routes? What does the connection look like with Mateer? And what is the thing that we have heard throughout all fall camp is that Isaiah Cetania had kind of emerged as a go-to guy for Mateer. What does that look like? Is Cetania running anything down the field, or is he 8 to 10 yards, move the sticks?
Yeah.
Kind of receiver.
Yeah. You know? I think the other thing is the concepts that are going to just look, concepts are going to look so different than they did a year ago. You're actually going to have some things that are set up to draw defenses one direction and dump the ball another. So it, like, it'll be, yes, I'm excited about that because I do think Satania is going to be a guy that is just an absolute problem in that 8 to 12 yard range. Get the ball in his hands, see what he can do.
I also think they're not going to show that much.
Right.
You know, so I think the other thing I would tell fans is OU is going to score a lot of points without having to open, I don't know, 50% of the playbook. Yeah. I wonder, but I also wonder how much they will show. I wonder how much is just vanilla, like our guys are better than your guys, so we don't have to do that much, or how much of the offense do we see? I think I'm curious about that. But yeah,
it'll be an interesting balance on that because it's the first time you're getting to see it live and you want to make sure you've got some things on tape that you can work on going into week two. I mean, because once it's live and it's against teams that it doesn't matter who it is on the other side, once it's live and it's against other guys, like, that tape is going to be valuable for you to analyze and look. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know. I wouldn't expect there to be a lot thrown out there just as far as things that are deceptive or tricky. But, like, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of things that make Oklahoma fans go, ooh, I wonder if that's going to be a new normal. Is that going to be what we see more of this year? So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, I would say I'm just really curious about what the rotations look like across the board, especially on offense. Even the wide receivers, because, I mean, you've got other guys like Zion Kearney, Ivan Kerryon, Elijah Thomas. When they get in the game, what do they look like? Do they get in the game in the competitive portion in the first half? Yeah. At running back, I mean, even like Javonte Barnes is going to be your starter. How much do we see Jay Knott at running back? And then, of course, the rotation on the offensive line. Defensively, I'm going to zero in on one position group, and you tell me if you think this is the most interesting or if you have another candidate. And to me, it's not just defensive end. It is left defensive end. And that group is Marvin Jones Jr., Taylor Wine, and Danny Okoye. I am so curious about what that rotation looks like. Because on the right side, you know, I mean, it's R. Mason Thomas with some PJ sprinkled in, at least now. Marvin Jones Jr. is listed as the co-starter at left defensive end.
Yeah.
With Taylor Wine second, Danny Okoye third. But I am just... If you're talking about position groups that, like, have a lot to prove in game one before Michigan, I think it's that group. What do you think? Most interesting, or do you have another candidate?
Yeah, no, wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I think that's the one that everybody kind of looks at. I guess if you forced me to pick another one, it would probably be that cheetah spot, but only because I think if you have a playmaker there, if you have a guy that can do it all, like if Kendall Daniels truly is as good as it sounds like he's been, I mean, the ceiling for the defense is elevated because that's a guy that can be in the box, out of the box, in pass coverage, rushing the quarterback. Like, if you've got that with him and Reggie Powers, I mean, it just kind of elevates everybody else. But know that the focal point has to be, what does Oklahoma have as far as pass rushers go opposite of R. Mason Thomas? Because if it's somebody that can be productive and force you to have pretty level pass protection on both sides, you're not doing a whole lot of sliding to RMT. Like if you have the ability to make people stay base and have to account for both sides, I mean, that's just unlocks more opportunities for R. Mason Thomas to do what he does. So you need somebody from that other side to really elevate. And if somebody does, like, I mean, you can't take it against Illinois State. You can't really take everything at face value, but you'll at least have an idea. Hey, yeah, this guy could be a problem, especially going into the next week. So.
Well, and you even mentioned R. Mason Thomas was even asked about it on Monday about, like, he's going to be the number one guy on scouting reports. Yeah. So what does that look like when teams shift protections to him? What does that open up for everybody else? I'm really curious, rotation, not only just in terms of how much everybody plays, but, like, If Marvin Jones Jr. runs out first, do they bring in Danny Okoye for third downs? When does Taylor Wine get into the mix? As far as Kendall Daniels, I am so curious about what that looks like and also how he is utilized. Because like you mentioned, you can put him everywhere, and he played everywhere at Oklahoma State, in the box, out of the box, safety, corner. How do they use him, though? Do they use him everywhere, or is there a look of when he's in the game, they're using him more as a linebacker compared to like Reggie Powers, who, when he's in the game, is probably going to be used more as a coverage guy. Also curious about Jeremiah Newcomb, who's listed at third on the depth chart. I thought that's interesting. I mean, he's going to get a chance in the game at Cheetah. But I think I'm curious, like when we go back and watch the film, I'm going to be really curious about the plays that Kendall Daniels is on the field and how is he being utilized. And also, how many times do we see plays where Kendall Daniels and Reggie Powers are both on the field at the same time? Right. And then even that middle linebacker spot, I mean, Kobe's going to run out first, but that I'm really curious what that rotation looks like with him and Sammy, because they didn't move Sammy to middle linebacker for no reason. They're going to play him.
Yeah.
I'm curious what that looks like. Is there a second year, or is there an underclassman guy that maybe we haven't talked about, or maybe one we have, that you're on either side of the ball?
Somebody that just continues to just not be talked about. And I think it's probably because I feel like fans have already written the book on this guy. And it's just not the case. This is Jacoby Johnson.
Yeah.
Like he's listed as a co-starter on that left side. That to me, for him to be listed ahead of Devon Jordan, is notable. And that's a guy that he's got all the tools. I mean, you just look at him as far as your corners go, he's at least 15 pounds, if not 20 pounds heavier than everybody else in that corner room. But he's got the length, and we've seen what he can do athletically. I mean, he's a freak athletically. So, yeah, that's a guy I think a lot of people feel like they've already written him off. This is what Jacoby Johnson's going to be. And I just don't think that's fair. I think you could see some real elevation from a guy like that this year, and it would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a role for him, which I'm curious about. I mean, I'm curious about the rotation everywhere, but especially at cornerback, because if you're these guys, I mean, Eli Bowen is not going to play
right
on Saturday. So if you are Jacoby Johnson, Jeremiah Newcomb, Devon Jordan, these are like, go out and do something on Saturday. Prove that you've got that you can play, that you've earned a role. I think another guy, I'm really curious about Torrey Blaylock. I'm really curious about Torrey Blaylock because is he second on the depth chart, partially because of availability? Sure. But I'll tell you this, I didn't really factor him into the rotation at all going into fall camp. I do now.
Yep.
I do now. What does that look like?
This is probably boring to talk about, but one that I genuinely am excited about and think that you could learn a lot about in week one, regardless of competition, is Tate Sandell.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be important. Like, that's going to be important down the stretch. And with the issues that Oklahoma has experienced in that room over the last couple of years, having a guy come in and there not be any oars listed whatsoever in your specialists whenever it comes to kicker, like for him to come in, win the job and win it outright for both place kicking and kickoff duties. I mean, that's you could genuinely learn something about that guy kicking in front of 80,000 people for the first time. So it'll be interesting to see. I would almost bet there will be some times in the game where the staff if they work themselves into a third and medium or third and long, you probably see some sort of play that would be on the conservative side just to set him up for just to see what he's got, you know, put him in that situation. So that'll be something else I'm looking for.
He went 19 of 23 on kicks a season ago.
Yeah.
At UTSA. I think he hit a 54 yarder at one point last year. He was 7 of 8 on kicks between 40 to 49 yards, 2 of 5 on kicks of 50 yards or more. I know he was hitting 50 yarders regularly in fall camp. I think he hit a 58 yarder, Brent said at one point.
Yeah.
I think he came in and just won that job. I mean, they added him out of the spring portal for a reason.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's going to be interesting. I mean, even Jacob Ulrich at punter.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I don't know how much he's going to be. How many times does he punt, you think? Over or under on punts? 2.5?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's probably right in that area. Yeah. But we saw last year just how important field position is in this, especially in a league where you're probably going to be playing a lot of one score games. So, like, you need those guys to be weapons. They can't be issues.
Last question I'll ask you, Brian. If this is a drudging, like it probably will be, if you're a fan, what are you? But the other part of this is you get 1 week to find, to tune up, figure out rotations before week two against Michigan in a game that I think all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, sorry, but I think is, I mean, it's probably the marquee game in college football next week.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, not only what do you hope to see, but if you're a fan, you're a full-on fan. What are you hoping you can put stock into on either side of the ball for this game before the Michigan game? Passing game, pass rush, a player, like whatever it is, what do you want to see? What can you put stock into if this is a drudging before the Michigan game next week?
I think you mentioned it there in passing, and it is, for me, it's pass rush. If you've got guys that you can just, if you can bring, you should be, I mean, God, you should be able to bring 4 against Illinois State and get home. But if you can bring 4 against Illinois State consistently and get home, and you've got guys like Danny Okoye, Taylor Wine, guys that really show, oh shoot, like there are some other guys on this team that can get after the quarterback. I think that sets up really well going into week two for people to get excited about it, because you've got Bryce Underwood coming in, who is highly touted. Like, I mean, if there's an accolade for a high school quarterback, like, he's got it. But he's coming to Norman to play his first road game. That in and of itself is going to be a challenge, right? If you see a pass rush that is like, okay, this team is going to be an issue for opposing quarterbacks, I think that just makes you feel, that makes the fan base feel a lot better about going into next week. Cause I think there's going to be some nerves. Like, there just is, it's a huge game. That's part of it. But, if you come out of this game, say Oklahoma has 6 sacks in this game, that's something that the fan base can be like, oh yeah, like third downs next week, this is going to be fun. Let's get after these guys. So I think that's where my eyes will look. Expect it to be pretty lopsided. Especially, like, here's the thing. Brent Venables isn't a guy to run up the score. Like, that's just not who he is. But there has been so much talk. Like, there has been so much frustration. I think it's going to be really hard for this offense to not just want to press and really make a point. And the defense for the same reason. There's a lot of frustration from how things went last year. So I think you're going to see abnormally high motors from these guys in week one. So, I to shorten the answer, the defensive line looking at pass rush for sure.
I like the answer. I'll add, I think the position group I'm watching most is the offensive line, because also, by the end of this game, Bill Beatenbow should have a pretty good idea of what five he wants against Michigan. If there's one position group you've got to be a little bit nervous about before that Michigan game is the offensive line.
Yeah.
And like, to me, if I'm a fan, you're a fan. If I'm a fan, the thing that I want to see is Illinois State should not have a sack. They shouldn't have one.
Right. Yeah.
Shouldn't have a sack. Doesn't matter what group is out there. Like, to me, short of John Mateer pulls a Shadir Sanders and runs himself into a sack because he won't get rid of the ball. Sorry, Shadir. I'm sure he's so pissed watching this podcast right now. like, to me, if you're trying to quiet any, or not all concerns, but a lot of the concerns, like, Illinois State should not have a sack. Yeah. And you should have a pretty good idea, or at least Bill Beanbo should have a pretty good idea of what my five looks like against Michigan.
Agreed.
That's what I would say. Brian, I think that's going to do it for us here on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. OU football season is here. It's here. We're going to be here every single week talking about the previous game, previewing the upcoming game, everything that comes along with that. You're going to want to make sure to like and subscribe here to this OU Insider YouTube channel. Become a VIP member over at our VIP OU Insider board today, because the season's here. Talking season's done. Thank God. Talking season is done. No better time to become a VIP member. No better time to like and subscribe here to this OU Insider YouTube channel. Thank you, Mr. Viking himself, for tuning in as always. Appreciate you guys for tuning in as always. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.